grocery margins are in the single digits on the retailer level. They're on the single digits. So it just needs to change. And that's where we fit in. We can actually bring the farms closer to the people and closer to distribution centers. When you talk about vertical farm in a larger context, controlled environment agriculture, CEA as it's known, you'll see that there's vertical farming, there's greenhouses, there's all sorts of, there's hydroponics, aquaponics. There are all sorts of methodologies to control the inputs and the variables in the environment around the plants that are growing. But when you do it 18 feet tall and you do it with sunlight in the size of a football field, roughly, we can produce 1.9 million pounds of produce.
Welcome to Mindful Businesses, presented by Sarani, and I'm your host, Vedya Iyer. In our podcast, we bring to you brands that are mindful in their practices and processes. A mindful business adopts and employs sustainable social, economic, and environmental practices. Today, we have with us Eddie Badrina, CEO of Eden Green Technology. Everyone deserves nutritious, fresh, and safe food. He joins us from Dallas, Texas. Welcome, Eddie.
Thanks so much for having me, Vidya.
One of the challenges of the 21st century is that we have to feed 7 to 10 billion by 2050, and we have to do that sustainably. According to USDA, agricultural activities contribute about 10.5% of the greenhouse gases, but these same activities offer us ample opportunities to reduce greenhouse gases. How is that possible?
The problem that we're trying to solve and what you illuminated, you've got a population density that's going up and you've got a demand for food and specifically for leafy greens, for herbs, for vegetables, and even meat alternatives through plant proteins. So you've got this driving demand and population growth. And then because of what you said, both in terms of climate as well as in terms of topsoil erosion, we've got a diminishing supply of greens. And so that's really the problem that we're trying to solve, is this delta of demand and then the supply piece. And really you have to solve for it is you either have to either find more ways to make more produce with less environmental impact, and or you bring the farms closer to the people to reduce the transportation costs and all the emissions that go along with that. It's a multivariable problem that we're facing, and I think there are a lot of different solutions. We just eat in green. We're thinking about it. We think in a much different way that solves for both of the population growth as well as the environmental and topsoil degradation.
One of the hot topics recently, off late, is regenerative agriculture.
Yeah.
And we talk about how the soil has the capability to absorb carbon.
The regenerative agriculture, if it's done at scale, can absolutely repair some of the environmental damage as well as regenerate and renew the topsoil that's there, the nutrients in the topsoil. The challenge with regenerative farming is it's not done at scale right now. I mean, you have to have wholesale changes to the agriculture industry in order for that to take effect. So the movement is good, and I think it's needed. I just don't know if it's going to be in time, right? There's such a huge, because regenerative farming has lower volumes overall, it still doesn't solve for that delta. It only solves for a little bit of the supply, and it solves for the environmental piece. It doesn't solve for the growing demand of produce. I think it's a good long-term solution. It's predicated, the assumptions are, is that there's widespread adoption across the commercial industry. And that's just a really high bar. That's a really high hurdle. So there's got to be another way. I think that's where we come in. It's not going to be one solution. Regenerative farming is not the solution. It's a solution. It's a part of the solutions that are going to get us to meet consumer demands, but not continue to degrade the environment.
Like you said, for that overall change, there are so many stakeholders who have to change the way they till, the way they, what the seeds are sowed, how the machines are made, you know, the earth tilling machines. And in fact, in regenerative farming, you don't even till.
Right.
So there has to be a change all across several industries to bring about that change. So while that is happening, we are talking about vertical farms.
Yeah.
What is a vertical farm?
So a vertical farm is one way of solving that problem. When you talk about vertical farm in a larger context, controlled environment agriculture, CEA, as it's known, is something that I think your listeners ought to be really digging in and researching. What does CEA look like? If you get a perspective of controlled environment agriculture, you'll see that there's vertical farming, there's greenhouses, there's all sorts of, there's hydroponics, aquaponics, there are all sorts of methodologies to basically controlled environment agriculture, to control the inputs and the variables in the environment around the plants that are growing. So for a vertical farm, vertical farms are trying to control are the inputs of nutrition and light and air and CO2 in a format that blocks out the things that are detrimental to a plant's growth, like weather patterns, both seasonal as well as cloudy days and hail and rain and wind, right? So you have seasonal patterns, you have weather patterns, they block out or they eliminate some of the environmental factors like pesticides, because in an enclosed environment, you should not have any pests. If you don't have pests, then you don't need pesticides. They are just trying to control those external variables as much as they can in an environment that they can grow much higher, 18, 20, 24 feet tall. So that's what vertical farming is in its essence. On the other end of the spectrum on CEA is you have greenhouses, your commercial greenhouses that you see that are not just growing produce, they're also growing ornamentals like roses and tulips and whatnot. And those greenhouses are great because, again, they're controlling the environment, but they're actually using sunlight. Vertical farming, except for us, vertical farming cannot utilize sunlight because of the way they're structured. They're basically flat tray upon flat tray upon flat tray, and those trays have to be lit up with LED lighting or some sort of lighting to provide light for the plants. Greenhouses solve for that because they provide light through sunlight.
The way I visualized vertical farming, I thought it was just up against the wall. Like I went to a garden show where they had these felt bags and you would put the soil. And in fact, I picked up one or two thinking like, okay, I'll have a wall or at least part of a wall in my living room with ornamental plants, you know. But it was really a hard way to have some green in your house. You could have water damage on your wall, on the floor. It wasn't that easy as they said it would be, you know?
Yeah, it's not easy. That's the short answer. Vertical farming is not easy. And I think that's the challenge with vertical farming is if you look at these indoor vertical farms, and I can name off a number of our peers, whether it's Aero Farms or Plenty or, gosh, Calera, ours is another one. All of these vertical farms, if you look at them, they're trays upon trays upon trays. Think of like farmland upon farmland upon farmland stacked like a substrate. Well, in between each of those stacks, you have to have lights because the stacks are, they're covering up each other. So you couldn't possibly do that in a greenhouse. It just doesn't make sense light-wise, and plants need light to grow. So what you end up having is there are stacks with lights. All of those are really, really expensive to build. They're expensive to maintain. Think about the light electricity costs of all of those lights in there. And then, like you said, they're very temperamental. While you eliminate some of the environmental factors, you start adding expenses. So all the vertical farms you see right now don't make money. And they won't make money for a long, long time because they're too expensive to build and they're too expensive to run to then produce salads and lettuce and kale and arugula and spinach at a price that the normal consumer can afford. So the ones that you do see, they're selling produce at a very high premium. Well, that's good if you're on either coast or you're in a big city and you have a lot of disposable income. But for the rest of America and the rest of the world, that's not going to cut it. It's not affordable. in long term, it's not, you know, in your terms, it's not a mindful business. There's no sustainability around it economically. It's just being subsidized. And a subsidized economy is no better than where we are now in terms of agriculture. All of our farmland is subsidized. That's not an economically sustainable way to go. So in addition to the population demand and the degradation of topsoil and the environment, all in there is you have to be economically sustainable and affordable for the consumer. That's the biggest hurdle you're going to run into.
So vertical farms are not just horizontal farms taken vertical. There is something more to it.
Yes, there is something more to that. Think about beds of plants that are just bunk beds, but they're like 15 bunks, right? That's a vertical farm.
How tall is a typical vertical farm?
A typical vertical farm, it can depend. Like some of our peers go up to 36, 40 feet. But just think of bunk beds full of plants and lights, and that's what you've got. And that's the best way to kind of put it. We are different. Eating green is different because we have been able to take those horizontal bunk beds and turn them on that side and then shine light and use sunlight. So we have combined the density of vertical farms with the economics and the use of sunlight of greenhouses. You put those two together and all of a sudden you've got vertical farms, like walls of vertical plants just bathed in sunlight. And that makes it really, really efficient, really economically sustainable. There's long-term value in what we're doing versus some of our other peers.
Eddie, we can see each other in the video and your hand gestures are amazing and giving me a visual, but our listeners can't. Can you just describe exactly what it looks like?
Yeah.
Like you said, a bunk bed turned on its side.
If a vertical farm are bunk beds with plants and lights, vertical greenhouse is like 18-foot vines spaced a foot apart in long rows that are yards long. And then you put 110 rows in a greenhouse. Think about 18-foot vines, call it 100 vines per row, and then 110 rows per greenhouse. That's what you have. That is an eating green greenhouse. We're a little bit larger. One of our modules is a little bit larger than a football field. But when you do it 18 feet tall and you do it with sunlight, what happens is in the size of a football field, roughly, we can produce 1.9 million pounds of produce out of that one area.
I have two questions. You said that the vines are a foot apart. So how do you get the sunlight in there?
For your listeners, if they can imagine the 18-foot vertical towers a foot apart all the way down a row, and then each row is 6 feet apart from each other.
Got it.
For people to pass through, for the harvesters to pass through. So you've got this row after row after row of all these vines a foot apart. It's the best way, honestly, for your viewers to get a sense of it is actually to go to our website. It's very difficult to describe in words, much more so than just your typical vertical farm. But if you go to our website and you look at the photos, or you go to any of our social platforms like Instagram or LinkedIn, Facebook, it's all just Eden Green Tech. If you go to Eden Green Tech on any of those platforms, you will see photo after photo of what I'm talking about.
And the second question I had is that pests play a part in our ecology. You're not killing them, but you know, there's pollination, there's crossbreeding, natural, they play a part, right? So how are, and say, if I'm completely exaggerating, say all farming goes to a vertical farming in a greenhouse, that wouldn't be good, right?
No, again, we are not the silver bullet. We are part of the solution for sustainable farming, just sustainable farming practices. I will take your statement with a caveat. Not all pests are additive to the growing environment. In fact, really no pests are. There are certain bugs, but no real pests are added to that growing environment. A lot of the reason that pests are pests is because they're usually negative consequence to the plants. And so those are the bugs that we are trying to keep out, whether for cotton, it's the weevil, for certain types of plants, it's the ladybug, right? Or the aphid, or, you know, the grub worm, any of that, the thrip. There are all sorts of bugs that just don't have any use other than, honestly, from a topsoil perspective, they're more useful when they die, because then they provide, right, the nutrients after they decompose. You know, from our perspective, we're trying to keep bugs out so we don't have to use pesticides. And because we